Hey everyone, welcome to the latest edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Albino. This week I'm joined by my colleague at Front Stretch, Mike Neff, as well as this week's special guest, Justin Haley, driver of the number 24 GMS Racing Chevrolet in the Truck Series, and this weekend's winner at Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. But before we get started, I wanted to remind you on how you can sign up for the podcast every single week. Subscribe to the Front Stretch Podcast on iTunes and you'll get it sent straight to your smartphone once it's published. Once you do, be sure to stop by iTunes and leave us a review, as that 5-star rating helps us out tremendously. All right, Justin, we had a little bit of an eventful race this past weekend in Canada, but you came out on top. You finished third in the first two stages, started eighth. Take us through your race.
Yeah, we had a really fast start on GMS Chevrolet. We were fast in practice in the dry and really had, really quick truck. And then, the rain came for qualifying. That threw us for a bit of a loop. It's the first time any national series is qualified in the rain. So we started eighth. We burned our tires up a little early. So didn't have the best starting position, but in the race, we just kind of, it was a pretty calm, no issue race. Just kind of took it, the best we could, focused on ourselves. Our goal going into it was to get as many points as possible because we were the 10th seed, and we just wanted to go there and finish well in the first stage, finish well in the second stage. And we moved up, obviously, got a bunch of points, and we were actually the highest points finisher in the race. So couldn't have asked for a better day all around.
Now, your race might not have been eventful, but the last corner was with Todd Gillen and Noah Gragson. Obviously, you're okay with the outcome because you got to victory lane, but what are your thoughts on that overall? And did you think that was going to happen or something like that would happen?
Yeah, I mean, I've been telling everyone history repeats itself, and for some reason at Canada, you got all these young guys in the Truck Series, and it's just destined to happen at this point. I mean, it's happened, all but one year, so... everyone was asking me, would you rather be the leader or the follower going in that last corner? And I told them at Race Hub a few weeks ago that I'd rather be in third and just watch it happen. So I guess my wish came true.
Now, speaking of watching it happen, you were back a little ways from that. At what kind of a vantage point did you see as you came through those last couple corners and that was unfolding in front of you?
Yeah, we really didn't have the fastest truck. Those KVM trucks and the Tory truck had Joe Gibbs Racing built motors. So the Omars were kind of lacking this weekend, and I knew on that green-white checkered that I couldn't catch Todd. I just knew I couldn't. We didn't have the speed down the straightaway. So I knew my best shot was to let Noah go, and I was okay with finishing third because I knew Noah was going to be super aggressive and go out there and try to get the win, and something could happen possibly. So I let Noah go, and he chased down Todd, and we came out on top, so that was pretty cool. It was, like I said, just a really calm race. We really thought about it methodically, and just worked out throughout the race.
And obviously, Noah and Todd are teammates at Kyle Busch Motorsports. Had you had been in second or been in Noah's position, would you have done something similar, or what's your take on that overall?
Yeah, the pass itself, I can't really put blame on anyone. You can say Todd was crowding him, or you can say Noah, really dove in there. It's a double-edged knife. There's really no good answer to it. Like sitting back and saying, if I would have been in Todd's position, I would have done this, or Noah's position, I would have done that. I think they both did what they had to do at the time, at the split-second decision to win the race, and I can't say I would have done anything different, or I would have, because I just don't know. I wasn't put in that position. So, honestly, I'm pretty lucky that it happened and thankful. And that's about all I can take from it.
Was there any kind of assistance from a spotter as you were coming through that final corner, or is that pretty much all in your hands at that point in time?
We do have a spotter sitting right there at turn eight, and my spotter said, watch out for these guys. They're probably going to get into each other. And that whole last lap, I wasn't really pushing it. John Hunter and Brett Moffitt were behind me racing pretty hard. So I knew I wasn't going to catch those guys, and I knew I needed to stay as close as I could. So I just, ran around, limited my mistakes. I wasn't setting a qualifying lap down because, I just knew we didn't have the speed in the Omar. So we went out there, and my spotter said they'll probably get together here just, again, based off what happened in the past. And they did, and he said, go low, and I kind of followed it through there. And pretty lucky. If I would have been any farther back, I think I couldn't have gone around them, and it kind of would have been a disaster. I think John Hunter might have been able to jump us or anyway. But we were just in the right, we were the right distance back to make it happen.
Enough. I'm curious to get your take on it because if I'm sure you saw Noah's post on Twitter or Instagram later in the day about how he did something, he made a move similar in the race, earlier in the race with Ben Rhodes, and he got by and it was clean. So enough. What was your whole thought on that?
That was a tough call. I understand it's a last lap and you got to go for the win. And we saw Cindric dump the crap out of Grala up there a couple years ago, but he was barely at the rear tire. It wasn't like he was alongside, and he hit him pretty squarely in the door at about a 45 degree angle. At the same time, Todd had to know it was coming and could have given him a little bit of room, and I think Todd still would have ended up coming out on top. So, there's a little blame to go to both of them. In the grand scheme of things, you're on the last lap of a race at a chance to advance to the next round of the playoffs, and if you get that win, you do it. I don't fault Noah for sticking it in there. I don't really fault Todd for trying to shut the door. It's in the grand scheme, it's a racing deal. I feel bad for Kyle Busch Motorsports. because they had a win in the bag one way or the other, and they end up losing out and having Justin snake by him. But at the same time, I'm pretty glad for Justin because now he knows he's going into the next round.
And Justin, that had to have been an interesting team meeting this morning or whenever they have it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm not into any part of that, but obviously. I knew everyone at GMS was pretty pumped up. I talked to Timothy today. He was the fill-in for Dalton Sargent / Spencer Gallagher, and he was pretty excited for it. So everyone at GMS is pumped that we've won almost half of the races this year, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and you have three starts at Motorsport in particular with two top fives. You think you finished fourth there last year. You obviously competed at Watkins Glen in the Xfinity Series this year. Didn't go as planned. But how much road racing do you have in your background?
So I grew up originally just dirt racing around the dirt track in Indiana, running sprint cars and stuff like that. And I kind of moved towards NASCAR and running the K&N and ARCA Series and got hired by H-Scout Justin Marsh to run the K&N E-Series in 2015. And there was, two or three road courses. Actually, four. I think we went out there and did Sonoma with the West Series. And I needed road course experience. I'd never done any before. So I'd say about 4 years ago, three, 4 years ago, I got into sports cars and Mike Coke Racing and learned everything that I could from it. Had Michael Self as my mentor. And he just taught me how to shift and how to road race. I went out there and did a full season in 2015 and 16 of the Trans Am Series. So I've done a lot of road course racing. I finished second, I don't know how many Kane and East races at Watkins Glen and VR and stuff like that. So to finally be able to cap and get the monkey off my back at a road course meant a lot.
Do you wish there were more on the schedule, on the truck schedule?
Yeah, I do wish there was more road courses on the truck schedule. That'd be cool. I think we could easily go to a place like Road Atlanta or VR or somewhere to that extent. I think it would be resourceful. We have a truck already. We have two trucks, actually. You have a backup truck and a primary road course truck. So they just kind of sit in the corner all year and they get run once. So I think it would be beneficial for NASCAR to go ahead and put a few more in. We could do the Charlotte Roval. It's a new race. So there's a lot of home tracks that we could go to, and I think it'd make it a lot more cost-effective and easier on the crew chiefs and drivers if we did get more road courses.
Now,
you talked about your history on dirt. Would you like to see some more dirt races in trucks?
No, I am not. I love dirt racing to death. I run a UMP Modified weekly, but I don't think too highly of Eldora. it's just a difficult place. I've never gotten the handle of it. I think I've finished in the top 10 both years, but I'm terrible there. It's just not a dirt car, and you're taking it to a dirt track, and they make it so dry slick because it's the only dirt car in the history of the world to have a windshield. So it's a difficult race, but yeah, I don't think anyone should put more dirt races on the schedule.
Enough with you. I'm curious.
Unless you're going to do some suspension work to make him a true dirt car, and then I'd be fine with it.
Yeah, gotcha. That's a good point. Neff, I'll throw it back to you though. With you know, Justin says he wishes there was more road races. I wish there was more road races too. And obviously, the Xfinity Series has had three in the past month. So, and they have the Roval coming up next month. So, I think there should be more on the truck schedule. And you know, though, I'm a big fan of road racing.
I mean, I appreciate road racing, and I would not have a problem with one or two more. I think it is kind of silly that we only do one road race for the trucks. We should either do none or at least two. And in reality, I think three would be a good number. But, I mean, you know me, I'm old school on this deal, and I would like to see us not do any races in the trucks longer than a mile. And, you know, outside of the road courses. And get us back to the roots and running around at, you know, NASCAR home tracks and building interest in guys like Justin so the fans relate to him at the grassroots level and then follow him up into the national series. It really frustrates me, and I feel like it's as NASCAR approaches their future, and let's all be realistic, their future is in question, building this sport back up needs to start at the home tracks level and the K&N level and the truck level. And bringing the trucks back and running more companion events with the K&N series at local home tracks is the way to kind of funnel guys into the national series, but also bring their fans along. So I'm down for a couple, you know, three, maybe even four, but I think three is a good number of road courses for the trucks. But I think we need to get rid of everything that's longer than a mile and get them back to running it where they started, which is at the local short track level.
Yeah, and I guess my point to that is, so I love road racing, obviously, but three or four, I mean, there's only 23 races on the schedule. I think two is probably a good number, but like Justin said, it gets cost efficient only having the one and having the two trucks. So, yeah. Justin, I guess for you, like, you heard Neff's suggestion about going, you know, how he thinks every truck race should be a mile or under. It's probably not realistic anymore, but what are your thoughts on like an ideal schedule?
You know, I don't think, you know, having every truck race under a mile is realistic. And I think probably the best thing we can do is base it off the ARCA schedule. ARCA has a very good, schedule in place. They run, you know, I don't know what it is, 20 to 25 races a year. They have dirt races. They have road course races. They have short tracks, your local short tracks here and there. They run the super speedways. They run the mile and a half. You know, it's diverse over there in the ARCA series. So I really like that style of schedule. You know, I'd love to go to ORP. That is a fun race, and I think it'd be sick in a truck. So I think that's about the best thing we can base it off of is the ARCA series.
Neff, we kind of went over this with Tommy Joe last month, but what we did with the Xfinity series in particular, but with the truck series, what's a track that you'd like to see come back?
Oh, without a doubt, Raceway Park. I mean, just hit yeah. on it. That's I will fight to the death on the fact that I think Raceway Park is the single best asphalt racetrack in the country, no matter what. And it infuriates me that we don't go there at all. And you know, it was purely a money thing, and the whole situation was just ridiculous. So yeah, I absolutely wish. And I think a cool idea would be to run trucks there the weekend of the 600, because we run the trucks on the weekend of the All-Star race, and then they run Xfinity and Cup at Charlotte for the 600. It would be awesome to run the trucks at Raceway Park the Friday night or Saturday night before the Indianapolis 500. I think that would be a perfect time. It would open the series up to a lot of fans that are in town for open wheel and that are there seeing some of the night before the 500 stuff. but at the same time, they'd get a chance to see the trucks. I think that would be ideal, and I ultimately think it would be a nice olive branch between NASCAR and Raceway Park, because they screwed Raceway Park yanking those races out of there. There was no chance for Raceway Park to keep those dates. They were basically told, thanks for your loyalty for 30-something years, we're taking your race away. And they were like, well, fine, if you're taking the Xfinity race, then we don't want a truck race. And it just got a lot of hurt feelings. So I think it would be a great opportunity to get trucks back to Raceway Park where they belong, and to kind of be an olive branch between Raceway Park and NASCAR to start rebuilding that relationship.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I've never even thought of that idea of running it the same weekend as the Indy 500. I think that's a great idea.
Fantastic.
Because like you said,
I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, you get those open wheel fans that are all, and there's, 300,000 of them. So, I don't know what the grandstand capacity is at ORP, but, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. I'm sure you could at least get, a good outing from the fans.
Oh, yeah, and there's a huge crowd out there for the night before the 500.
Yeah.
I think it would be just a great melding of the two different disciplines. Have the trucks there at the same time you're running the Silver Crown cars, and I don't remember if they're running midgets again or not. I know USAC kind of scrapped their asphalt midgets for a year or two there, and now they're kind of coming back. So I don't remember if they're running midgets back out there for that weekend or not. But just the fact that you've got Silver Crown and Sprints out there and then ran the trucks with it, I think it would be a phenomenal weekend.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, Justin, you got the win this past weekend in Canada, and now what, the Truck Series has one race in the next 6 or 7 weeks. I mean, this first round of the playoff goes 7 weeks long, and it's only 3 races. How challenging is that going to be to kind of get in a rhythm? I know, obviously, you're into the next round, so it doesn't really matter for you, but what are your goals going to be in the next 2 races?
Well, I was telling everyone, before the Canada race, I was like, I really hope we win and lock ourselves in, or I'm going to have a lot of time to overthink this whole playoff thing. So it's nice, the nerves are off. I've got a few weeks that, we can't mess around, but we can definitely be a little less aggressive, and we can save some of our better trucks to go to the round of 6 instead of fighting, taking our best stuff in the round of 8. So, our plan is just to keep building, be aggressive, and add on to that point cushion and that we just built up at Canada. So we haven't been the best of Vegas, and Talladega we were pretty good at last year. So, I'm super thankful to be locked in this early.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's 2 wild card races in this first round with the road course and also Talladega. And I know you've run well past at both road courses and plates, probably should have, you could argue, won the Xfinity race in Daytona a couple months ago. See, I think you kind of got away with this one. You don't have to really, you can just go after a win at Talladega now, right?
Yeah. Talladega and Vegas, we can play different strategies than the other guys will to try to, get wins. So, that's an advantage. We're the only one that's sitting in that seat right now, and hopefully we can go out and win Vegas and win Talladega too. And it's a pretty open book, and the limits are endless.
Neff, for you, the scheduling kind of seems to be the theme of this podcast so far, but 7 weeks for 3 races. I mean, obviously at the beginning of the year, also the truck schedule is kind of spaced out, spread out. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, it's a little different from last year.
Drives me crazy. I mean, it really does. And just think about it. Everybody in the sport and some people outside of the sport were talking about that finish at Canada and what an amazing deal it was. And all of this momentum is built up from that event. And now we're going to have one race in 5 weeks or whatever it is. And it just... We do the same thing beginning of the year. Usually have a great race come out of Atlanta, and then we're off for 5 weeks. I understand they don't run as many races because it's a lower budget series, and they don't travel as much. And I mean, there's a bunch of different reasons for it, but they just need to get these races more evenly spaced out if we're going to run this and take, you know, more spread out days off rather than having two big chunks at the beginning and the end of the schedule where we have big gaps. Because, I mean, the truck struggled to get momentum from viewership anyway. And now you're going to turn around and by the time we get to Vegas, people are going to completely forgotten about Justin sneaking through there and grabbing that win. Which was one other question I had for Justin. Do you look back at your year now outside of the questionable call at Daytona and realize that now we've got two wins, both of which were kind of fortuitous from people banging and beating and moving each other out of the way and opening up a door for you to get through and grab the victory?
I don't take either one for granted. And obviously, Daytona could have gone a little bit better for us. You know, we put ourselves in position, and we can't control what happened after that. So the two wins kind of really just capped it off. When I went over there Xfinity race and I took my truck crew, we took our truck hauler. We had one Xfinity car up top and didn't have a backup car, and it was just, you know, doing what we knew. We didn't have a lot of changes. Took cars that were just kind of sitting in the corner and ran them. So it meant a lot to go over there and run good. And, you know, my crew is a young crew, and we have a lot of fight in us. And we're, you know, the momentum definitely helps. But I honestly enjoy this because when we did win Gateway, there was only, you know, a few days until the next race. So we didn't get to, you know, really live it up. So now we get, you know, 2 to 3 weeks to think about it. And we're the top dogs for a while. So that's a good feeling.
You got your 19, Justin. You got to be careful with living it up.
I don't live it up too much. I'll throw a party. I think it's sometime in September, and the party's going to consist of some wake surfing and some Pedialyte. So we'll be pumped up.
Nice.
Pedialyte.
Something I never thought. Awesome. Something I never thought would get brought up on the podcast.
There you go. Pedialyte and. Got to figure out from our over 21 crowd what the best mix is to go with Pedialyte. Is it tequila or vodka?
That's not what I was talking about.
But Justin, you told me at Pocono that the Xfinity race at Watkins Glen was your last scheduled one on the circuit, but will you be doing any racing with this time off?
Yeah, I actually leave tomorrow. We're going to go to Illinois. Do some Midwest racing in my modified. We're going to do seven different racetracks I've never seen before. So I'm going to be doing that. Then I got a little vacation planned to go to the Bahamas and do some fishing with my family. And that's going to take up my next 2 weeks. We're going to go to Vegas and hopefully have another good run and take another few weeks off and go to Talladega. So got a pretty planned vacation time here.
Have you ever run the Hell Tour with your modified in the summer?
Yep, I did this year. In between, I did the Iowa truck race and the Iowa Xfinity doubleheader, actually. And I went after the Iowa race. We went straight. I met my guy. I met my modified. We ran. We tried to run a few races. Man, I forget. It was like Jacksonville and some other tracks. But they all three nights got rained out. So I actually got like a heat race in, and that's it. And then I went straight from there, went to Pontoon Beach. And that night won Gateway. So I ran like 8 or 9 nights in a row from Iowa to Gateway win. So it was a pretty packed week. I like to keep myself busy.
Nice. Now, have you ever tried to do the whole thing where you run all 30 races that they run?
No. Honestly, does anyone actually go do all the Hell Tour races? Like, because I picture it as like people, you know, take a few nights off here and there. But you'd be pretty crazy to do 30 nights.
I mean, I know on the late model side, there's usually 5 or 6 guys that will do the whole thing. And that has been a dream of mine forever, that I wanted to go and wrench on somebody's car and do the whole thing. And I had a chance this summer because Nick Hoffman was actually going to do it in his late model. And he was looking for some guys to help out. And unfortunately, I had two schedule conflicts right at the beginning of July, the first two weekends of July, and I couldn't do it. But I've always wanted to go and crew for somebody and do the whole thing. I don't know on the modified side. It always seems like modified guys There's a handful of them that run the majority, but there's usually like four or five races that they take off because they run their points a little different than the late model guys do. But late model guys, if you want to win the championship, you pretty much have to run the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that's what I was talking about. I don't have a late model. I've been talking about building one just because the late model shows are so much money. It almost makes sense. And, you know, you put a lot more money into a late model than you do a modified, but there's a lot more shows you can go chase around the country, and that's kind of what I'm trying to do. So maybe sometime when I'm done NASCAR racing, we can go up there and do some Hell Tour racing.
No, keep me in mind. I'll be glad to tag along on a wrench for you, brother.
Sounds good.
But, Justin, no more Xfinity races or anything like that in NASCAR in between the time?
No. I'm just focused on the truck season from now on, and going to go try to chase, getting the round of four in the championship. That's my main focus.
Now, speaking of that championship, and this is obviously fast-forwarding about 3 months because of the schedule, but since you won Gateway, you've got 8 straight top tens, probably the best stretch of your career, you'd probably say. 2 wins, obviously. What more do you feel like the 2014 needs to make a run at that title?
I think we're close. Obviously, Johnny has quite a few more wins than the 2014 does, but coming out of the GMS stable, we're strong, and we've really found a package that me and Kevin like. You look at the stats, and you say, you know, we've got 8 straight top tens, and you know, we really shouldn't have been ranked 7th seed going into the playoffs. We ran top 5 almost every race, and just something unlucky happened. So, looking into it at the playoffs, you know, I was pretty disappointed that we had an issue here. You know, we had an alternator die here, or you know, a loose wheel here, or something just completely out of our control happened. And I was like, man, you know, we've just been super unlucky this year. Then we go to Canada, and we get a whole lot of luck. So, I think we're fast. I think we proved it. You know, I think we can run with the top 3 guys, which I think are, you know, Moffitt and Sauter and sometimes Gregson. So I think we're fast, and we're definitely in the picture.
Now, if any more truck questions related to Justin, or do you want to move on to Xfinity? Neff? All right, we might have lost Neff here, but Justin, you're still here, right?
Yep.
All right, cool. So, would you like to talk to Xfinity?
Yeah, man, whatever you want.
Sure. All right. So, last week on the podcast, Neff was on it with me and another one of our colleagues. I chose Justin Allgaier, and he found victory lane again this past weekend, kind of off some strategy. I know he won at Montreal in 2012, but the last couple road course races, he's really proven that he's the real deal. I mean, he's won, at Mid-Ohio, finished 3rd at Watkins Glen, and then won this week. What are your thoughts on Justin and him kind of being a road racer now?
Yeah, you know, Allgaier's always been super nice to me. And, you know, we grow up from the same background up in Indiana, Illinois, racing on dirt. And, he actually runs a UMP Modified sometimes with me. So, I really never thought of Allgaier as a road course racer. You know, he's proven it. He's got something going on over there with the 7 guys over at JRM. And they seem to have found something on the road courses. So, pretty pumped for him. He deserves it. You know, there's a good stretch of his career there where he wasn't running the best. So, it's nice to see him finally in good equipment and running up front.
And with you running a truck and Xfinity car, both on a road course in the past month or so.
Can you hear me now?
Well, you're back, Neff.
Ah, there we are. I don't know where the heck I could still hear you guys, but I was talking and you weren't responding to me.
You got to love technology.
Yeah, man.
But Justin, for you, when, you know, you ran the Xfinity car at Watkins Glen, you ran this past weekend in Canada. What are the similarities and differences between running a truck and an Xfinity car on a road course?
They're very similar. They run, you know, similar engines, the same transmissions. There's really no big difference. The trucks have a little bit more top heaviness to them than the Xfinity cars do, but in relation to braking and cornering speeds, and we run the same tires. So, honestly, there's not that big of a difference. The Xfinity cars have a bit more power, but all in all, lap to lap, they're really honestly pretty similar.
Now, Neff, did you get to watch the Xfinity race this past weekend?
I did.
What'd you think about it?
Enjoyable.
I thought it was a pretty good race with Allgaier coming back, playing some strategy, getting that win.
I mean, Road America is such an awesome track. And yeah, I got a kick out of Allgaier, and like Justin said, a dude has suddenly become a road racer on us after running around in the Midwest on dirt for so many years. That's going to be the new path to road racing success. Go to the Midwest and run around on dirt, because it's worked for Boyer, it's worked for Justin, it's worked for the other Justin. So that seems to be the way to go. But yeah, the race itself I thought was great. Multiple strategies playing out on the deal. I was a little bummed to see Bill get kind of spun out there at the end. I thought he was going to be able to come home with close to a top 10, and it ended up being 25th or whatever it was. But the race itself at the front, I thought, held a lot of excitement right up until whatever that was, about three laps to go. And then the door opened and Allgaier swung by those two guys, and there was nobody in the screen with them when they were taking the final shots until Tift right there near the end, I think, got it inside of 6 seconds. But, yeah, it was a cool race. Road America is awesome all the time. And I was really happy for Matt Tift, too. I mean, that dude is knocking on the door of a win at a road course, and I don't think it's going to be too long before he finds one.
Yeah, and he won the pole. He won his first ever pole this past weekend. Now, Neff, we talk about Allgaier a lot on this podcast when we talk Xfinity, because this year he's been a wheelman. I mean, he's got 4 victories now, which is a career high.
Yep.
And I mean, you saw every time coming out, I believe it was Canadian Corner, the thing would fishtail sideways and he'd save and go on about his day. I truly believe he deserves a better another shot in the Cup Series, but I'm not sure if he'll get it. He told me in the past that he's content with staying at JRM, but would like to get another shot in a top ride because he never really got that opportunity in the Cup Series, obviously running with H. Scott. So now if I'll start with you and then I'll go to Justin, you think you'll ever get another shot in the Cup Series?
Oh, that's tough. And unfortunately it's just the environment that we have now with Cup racing. It has all come down to young guys bringing money. And the advantage that he has is he does bring money. Rick Brandt loves him. And and I thought that was so cool. That was one of the neatest parts of the end of that race. Getting to see his daughter be there and celebrate that victory. But B, talking to him in victory lane. And the fact that Justin was aware that Rick wasn't there because Sierra started college this weekend, and that you've got such a close family tie with the combination of Brandt and Allgaier, and just that true familial connection that they have there. So he's got that money behind him, and I feel like that there will probably be an opportunity somewhere that he could get into a top ride, but it's going to be hard just because, you know, what's he at, 32?
Yeah,
something
he's
like that,
in his mid-30s, yeah.
I mean, that's late to be getting up into a Cup ride again. But at the same time, we're seeing sponsors leaving the Cup Series. So if you have Brandt willing to step up and write a check and take your pick, I mean, Furniture Row's looking, you know? And they're saying that they're not going to – that Barney's not going to put his own money back into it. If Brandt turns around and says, here's a check, what's going to prevent Allgaier from going and jumping in that ride if Truex is going to get out of it? So the landscape is unfolding, and the fact that he has money behind him could get him in a ride. There's no question that his talent is good enough to get him in a ride, but we've seen that in the current world of NASCAR, talent doesn't matter. It's all about the Benjamin.
And Justin, I'm curious to get your take on that, because if we look at the Cup Series, right, 40 cars, 40 drivers got to fill those cars, obviously, and I would say Justin is obviously among the top 40 drivers in NASCAR, but like Neff said, it's all about money, but he does have that funding.
Yeah, for sure. I think Justin, I'm sure he could place him in the top 20, for sure, top 15. He's one of the best there is, and he's proven it. He's run better than Sadler has this year in similar equipment, and he's kind of the lead dog at JRM right now. So, I'd like to see him move up to Cup again. He had those few years and he's got the experience and he's done the schedule, but you got to also remember he's got a family. So, it's really up to him.
Yeah, that's true. And I think one of the things he has going in his corner, though, is Dale Jr.'s boss. He's saying he belongs in the top series. Neff, that's a pretty nice advocate to have.
Yeah, it doesn't suck having Dale Jr. in your corner these days. speaking of which, and to go on a completely different tangent here, we were talking about the truck schedule and where that goes. I'm really liking the fact that over the last month, Jr. has been pounding the drum really hard about getting the trucks back to local short tracks. And I'm hoping that his gravitas to this thing is going to put even more pressure on NASCAR to get them to start going back to these local short tracks. But back to the original question, yeah, having Junior behind him, I don't know that that's going to get him over there to Hendrick, but it could end up getting him somewhere like Chip Ganassi or who knows, even Richard Childress Racing. If they're looking for sponsorship and he brings it, that could be another place that he could slot into real easily.
That's true. And Justin, you know, the regular season points battle in the Xfinity Series, I think it's one of the best points battles I've remembered in a long time, because you got five guys. It's not two or three. It's five of them. We're all going for that additional 15 playoff points with Allgaier, Cole Custer, Daniel Hemric, Elliott Sadler, Christopher Bell. We got Darlington, Indy, and Las Vegas. I know I just named a lot of names there. But who you got getting these 15 points? Because I think experience outweighs inexperienced to a degree, like at this weekend at Darlington, but then these other guys are just fast.
Yeah, you know, I think any of them on a given week can go out there and compete. You know, I don't think you mentioned Daniel Hemric. You know, he's always right there. He's fast and he's competitive. So it just depends, what track, a driver likes. It's obviously a little experience helps, but sometimes, not having that experience and not having that, conscious voice in your head telling you no to do something helps as well. So, like I said, it's really, again, just a toss-up. You can't predict the future.
Right. Yeah, and Neff, they're separated by 33 points, the five of them. I mean, that's almost half a race, just over half a race. So any bad – I mean, Darlington this week, any miscue – from Allgaier or Bell could close them all back in. And then we got five guys going for it, honestly, going into the last couple races.
Yeah, and don't forget you get a really cool trophy to go with it.
Yeah.
I don't know why we're giving a trophy for the regular season champ this year, but we are. But yeah, I'm with you. It's pretty neat that the regular season is that close manufactured championship for excitement, and it turns out that a regular season points battle would have been probably just as exciting. But I'm with you. It's one of those deals where you could have two or three of these guys running nose to tail going into three at Darlington, and one of them mess up and three of them get taken out, and the whole point thing get thrown up in the air. It's this weekend when they start tearing around the old egg-shaped Darlington Raceway.
Yeah, and I know the road course this past weekend was obviously Xfinity only, but four of them finished in the top five, and Bell was running there for a lot of the race and got spun late. So it'll definitely be interesting. I'll give you both. Justin, who you got? Who do you think will get the 15 points, then I'll go with Neff.
What are my options again?
You got a bunch of them. You got a handful. You got Allgaier, Bell, Custer, Hemric, or Sadler. Who's going to get the 15 playoff points?
I'm going to go with let's go with Allgaier. He's been the talk of the hour, and he's shown speed the past few weeks. So, I think it'll be him.
Neff, I second that, because he's got 11 straight top tens, which is a career high, and he's led the most laps out of Xfinity regulars this year.
Well, fine. I'm not going to just jump on the bandwagon and beat the same drum. I'll go with Christopher Bell. I think his ability to find faster lines is going to pay off at Darlington. And then Indy with the play package. I'll go with Christopher Bell pulling it off and being the regular season champ.
Got it. Now, a couple more questions here. Justin, we talked off air. You wanted to bring up Bill Elliott. Obviously, that's one of the reasons why you said you watched the race, because he made his return at 62 years old to GMS Racing, one of your teams. So What were your thoughts? I know you had a little bit of an adventure. You got in the back of, I believe, Catherine Legg early on, and then got spun out late. Finished 20th, but pretty cool just to see him return.
Yeah, obviously, you know, I was teammates with Bill Elliott, you could say, over there at GMS Racing. So I've actually got his shirt on right now. I got it today at GMS, and it's pretty cool. So head over there and get yourself one. It's a limited edition, I hear. So, no, it was cool. Cool to see Bill, and everyone at GMS was pretty pumped up. Obviously, Chase has been doing a phenomenal job with us and building the Xfinity program over there and giving us good information. I've talked with him quite a bit and leaning on him. It's been helpful. So, you know, it was cool to see Bill over there and, you know, show speed and you know, like you said, he lined up for a good finish, and obviously it just didn't pan out his way. So, just super cool.
Neff, I thought it was pretty cool, you know, to see Bill back in the top series as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was a neat story. I always like seeing these guys and, you know, we rather than seeing Morgan Shepherd out there not finishing for the 83rd race in a row or whatever it was, it's cool to see somebody go out and kind of generate that buzz and get some of the old fans wound up again. So that was enjoyable. Again, I thought he might do a little better than he did just because it's not like he's been sitting on his couch. You know, he's been running these vintage races. So he's been doing some road racing and still keeping himself pretty sharp. So I was hoping he might do a little bit better out of that. But as you mentioned, they got kind of accordioned up on a restart pretty early there. And that kind of jacked up his aero on that car. And Lord knows that at Elkhart Lake, you need some aero. So that definitely hindered him. But it's something fun to do. I don't want to see it every weekend, but if we do it once or twice a year and have somebody like him, or I know Terry Labonte was on the Dale Jr. Download and said there's no chance he's coming back and doing it again. And Dale Jarrett was pretty adamant that he's not going to do it either. But it'd be fun to see one or two of these guys come back once in a while and do some one-offs, especially on these road courses where you never know what might happen. I think it's good for the sport. It's good to bring some of the old-school fans back who might have left, if even just for one race.
Now, I know Justin's answer. I think I know what it would be to this. But, Neff, do you think there's too much hype around it and too much? Obviously, Bill's a Hall of Famer, so he should get the recognition he deserves. But do you think there's too much hype about it?
Initially, I felt like there was going to be. When they announced it and the buzz the first, like, 3 days was a bit much. And I honestly was kind of tired of it. And I'm like, they're going to hammer us with this thing for 2 weeks until this race happens. But once that first weekend got done and we went through a week of normal race buildup, it really kind of died down. And I felt like they paid it the right amount of attention. So it wasn't overwhelming. The first 3 days, I was like, okay, let's check ourselves a little on this thing. But after that Sunday, the Sunday after they had announced it, it kind of died down, and I felt like it got the proper amount of attention. So I didn't really have a problem with it.
But Justin, obviously it's good for GMS. I mean, to get on television so much.
Yeah. GMS it's placed itself in the right, you know, position to have Chase come over and whatnot. And we've got a lot of publicity this year, and it's obviously helped her on the truck side. So, it's been a good season for GMS. Like I said, We won Talladega, we basically won Daytona in the Xfinity Series, and we've won half of the truck races. So pretty career season for GMS, and hopefully we can top it off with a championship.
All right, this will be my last racing question. And, Justin, you don't have to comment on it because it's kind of deep. It's about the Connor Daly deal, Neff. For those who didn't know or didn't watch the race coverage this week, his father used a racial slur over 35 years ago, I believe, and he got fired from his job recently. I think it was in Indianapolis. But after it came out, Lily Diabetes, who also sponsors Ryan Reed, both of whom are diabetics, took its logos off the number 6 car, which was Daly's first career NASCAR start. Neff, I thought this was just kind of it looks bad on all sides. Kind of a tough break for Daly.
I thought the whole thing was ridiculous.
I agree.
I really do. If Connor had said it, absolutely. Got no problem with it. But we're now at a point where a driver loses sponsorship because of something his dad said 3 decades ago.
Before he was born.
I mean, he wasn't even alive yet. And you're taking sponsorship away. If anything, I felt like it was an opportunity to move forward from that mindset of 35 years ago. And it's kind of interesting. I was watching a documentary today, as a matter of fact, about Major Taylor, who was a bicyclist back in the 1800s. And he was the first really black superstar athlete of any sport. And, you know, he talked about, you know, the kind of stuff that he had to battle with. And then they had a gentleman named O'Ree who played hockey for the Bruins, and how he went and was going to play professional baseball, but the amount of racism he saw in the South in the 50s was just too much for him to deal with, so he decided to go be a hockey player instead. And, I mean, this is all stuff that happened not in y'all's lifetime, because you're younger than I am, but literally was still going on when I was born. I was born in 1963, and there was still segregated bathrooms in the South. And I have a hard time wrapping my mind around that in today's day and age. And I felt like this was a great opportunity that Eli Lilly and Connor Daly could have got up in front of God and everybody and made it a positive. And said, you know, the times have changed, and we're in a new world, and we're working together to promote, you know, unity and colorblindness, and let's bring everybody together and make this something good instead of something bad. And instead, I just felt like Lily just it was a knee-jerk reaction from people in corner offices and in PR offices that just immediately want to distance themselves from any even remote possibility of being tied to something racist. And I feel like the better thing to do is rise above it and make it a positive. And I felt terrible for Connor because it was nothing in his control. And I thought Lily should be ashamed that they didn't seize an opportunity to do something good. And if anything, I felt like they set things back.
Yeah, I think my thoughts echo Neff's. Justin, I know you got to get going here. But before you do, we do predictions every week. I know it's your first time on the Front Stretch podcast, at least since I started hosting it over a year ago. So we're going to Darlington this week. Who you got winning the Xfinity and Cup Series?
I'm going to go with Chase, my teammate over at GMS. He's gonna be good. He's run really, really good in the equipment over there in the 23 car. So I'm gonna go with him. And then the Cup race is gonna be a little harder. You know, the top three, or you know, the big three, whatever you want to call them these days. You know, that they're always a good option. But I think Larson's gonna pull through. He's always been fast at Darlington, and you know, I think he's got this one this weekend. So Chase and Larson.
Well, sweet. Thanks for joining us, Justin, and congrats on the win.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Take care, brother.
Now, Neff, I got to ask you, we'll get right into predictions here, unless you want to talk about anything else.
Nah, I think we're good.
Sweet. So, like I told Justin, we're going to Darlington, obviously. Who you got winning? It should be a good one. Throwback weekend, I love it.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the throwback weekend.
We got to say who we think our best throwback scheme is as well.
Gosh, I haven't even gone through all the schemes yet.
There's some good ones. I don't think they're as good as years past, but there's still some good ones.
I'm going with Christopher Bell to win the Xfinity race. I feel like I think Denny Hamlin's going to give him a real run, but I honestly think Christopher Bell's going to be the one that's going to outdistance the Cup guys, with especially Harvick and Keselowski. I think those two are going to put on a show with Hamlin, but I think you're going to see Christopher Bell shine above all of them. And then on the Cup side, Harvick is good there, and he's been hot, and he's but Kyle Busch is mad about Bristol. I'll go with Busch. I'll take Kyle Busch to do it in the Skittles retro.
Which is one of my favorites. The paint scheme. I feel like it's going to be a Denny Hamlin weekend, but I don't want to pick him to win Xfinity. I'll go Elliott Sadler. Why not? He won there 2 years ago. He's due for a win. He's retiring at the end of the year. Man, he needs a win.
That would be pretty big.
Yeah. It would give him a confidence booster going into the playoffs, and it could give him the points lead, like we were mentioning earlier. And then for Cup, I kind of mentioned who I'm picking. Denny Hamlin also needs a win. This weekend will mark a year anniversary since his last win, and he's always good at Darlington, always runs up front. Last year, he came from like 16 seconds back because he pitted late, and obviously tires matter a great deal at Darlington. And he's running a throwback to his first ever race car, which I think is really cool. That's one of my favorite throwback schemes as well. Neff, I'll pick Hamlin to win Darlington, the Southern 500. But have you looked at the throwback schemes?
I haven't looked at them much. I've seen a few of them unveiled, and I don't know. I'm a traditionalist. I kind of like Harvick's Busch Beer one.
which is a replica of one of the Busch beer cans, correct?
Yeah, I kind of dig that. I'll vote on that one.
Yeah, I mentioned Hamlin's. I also like Kurt Busch's, which is a throwback to his, when was it, 2003 with Ricky Craven, the photo finish there, which is one of the best finishes ever.
Absolutely.
There's a couple other good ones. Casey Kane's running one from his best year in 06, which isn't that much of a throwback, but still a nice paint scheme. There's others, but I really like the John Deere with Ricky Stenhouse. That brings back childhood memories for me. The John Deere car.
Was he throwing back to the Chad Little run?
Yep.
Nice.
And then there's
some. I did not see that one.
Oh, it's a nice one. And then there's also Ryan Blaney playing homage to his dad, the Jasper Engines car.
Yep.
So there's some nice ones. Chase Elliott's got a nice Napa one. There's an Oscar Mayer one with Kenseth, which is nice. I think you know, Darlington's one of my favorite race weekends of the year, so also one of the biggest races of the year, period, to win. And it's all about nutrition, right? Or attrition.
Attrition.
Yeah, attrition. Yeah.
And the thing is, and this kind of goes back to my point that we've been kind of hammering here for the last few weeks about what NASCAR needs to do, and I know we've been beating the schedule a little bit on the trucks this podcast, but this goes back to what we need to do with the schedule in general. Everybody needs to have one date, because if you have one date, it then becomes an event.
Agreed.
And a spectacle, and everything for that facility can go into that one race weekend because it's the only shot they've got. When they've got two race dates, they split their focus, and it just feels like they don't give everything to either of the dates. And I feel like if you had one race date, that gives you the opportunity to truly make each race date special at a given facility. And I feel like that's why this throwback weekend is such a big deal, because everybody is on board and fully into making it special at Darlington. And yes, the history of that place and everybody's love for it absolutely is a big part of it. But at the same time, it's the only race they've got. And so they put a lot into it, and it makes it a bigger event. And I feel like if we did that across the board, I think it would make the whole series better.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you saw that this year at New Hampshire, for instance, with Las Vegas getting their second date. I was at New Hampshire last month, and it was more of an event. They brought in more things for the fans, more events for the fans throughout the weekend. Now, the fans aren't happy about it, although they are still, and they probably shouldn't be, because they're Northeast Racing fans and they're loyal, and New Hampshire's had two races for a long time now.
Since they took a date from North Wilkesboro.
Yep.
How's that feel, New Hampshire?
Yep. But I don't know, they still get a 250 lap modified race, which is the longest race I think they've ever had. So it'll be interesting in September, but yeah, I agree. It does make it more of an event when you have just one at a racetrack. Watkins Glen, I think that's why it's so popular. One of the reasons.
I mean, California, yeah. Atlanta.
Yeah.
All of them have got, it just the ones that have got one date, it truly makes it a spectacle at their event. And I think it makes a difference.
I agree. Now, Neff, before you wrap up this podcast, I think you know about this. I'm sure you do. At Front Stretch, we're starting to do Patreon by the end of the week. So I don't know what Neff knows about Patreon, but if you pay $5.99 a month to support us, you'll get exclusive content. So I know we're doing like a Parker Kligerman. I put in that. We got an Eric Jones interview. Parker Kligerman's about his television side of things. And then we're also going to have like a weekly 5-minute podcast, which you might not know about because I might be breaking that to you. but I think it's a cool deal. We're finally getting up and running. So check us out on Patreon. Yeah.
It's going to be a neat deal, and it's something that I've talked to with Tom about for a while. I love to get on pit lane at the end of races and interview drivers and just get that emotion as they get out of their car. And, yeah, a lot of it's kind of the canned response stuff, but at the same time, you do get some of that raw emotion. And try as you might to quote those interview moments, you don't feel the emotion when it's written on paper.
Yeah.
So that is something that Tom and I have talked about going forward next year, is putting those post-race interviews on Patreon so that if you are a Patreon subscriber to Front Stretch, you will get that content and feel that emotion. There's also discussion maybe next year that my Tech Talk column, where I interview a driver or a crew chief every week about the challenges of the upcoming week, having that be on Patreon as a audio interview instead of doing it in written form. Because, again, you lose a little bit in translation from the interview when you go to typing that out instead of hearing it word for word from the interview.
Absolutely. Yeah, the Tech Talk, I think, would be way better. I mean, I edit it on Thursday night, but I think it'd be a much better listen than a read, because you do get that emotion. And just like, I mean, honestly, Kyle Busch could be a weekly occurrence on the Patreon site because he has that raw emotion after every race. And yeah, I like that idea too, because it gives the fans and our listeners, our fans, a little bit of insight on what we get to see. And yeah, it's just $5.99 a month. It supports us. You get exclusive content. So we'd appreciate it if you sign up. But Neff, any final thoughts?
Final thoughts. We're getting ready to go to Darlington, man. It is an exciting weekend. I love getting out there and getting pictures of all these cars and putting a gallery up every year. I try to do that. And just the history. I mean, there are so many people. I liken it to going through the gates at Indianapolis. I tell anybody that's any kind of a race fan, if you go through the gates at Indianapolis, the hair stands on end on your arms just because you feel the history. And it's the same thing at Darlington. When you go through that tunnel into the infield and you look up at those walls and you realize that that's the wall that Cale Yarborough went over, you know, and you're just like, I mean, it's the same place. And if you take the time on the weekend to take a walk over and look at the minnow pond, just to go look at it and see the grandstands in the background and just soak in all of that history. I mean, it truly is the history of our sport. I get that Daytona is the big race and it's the big track, but Darlington is there before that, just like Martinsville. Martinsville was before Daytona. And those are two of the racetracks that we go to that I love to just sit back in a moment when it's not crowded, whether it's early in the morning or late at night on a race day, when the place is relatively empty and you just hear history. You can feel it and you can hear it because there's so much that has gone on there. And I'm so excited to be going back to Darlington again, because it's one of my two or three favorite tracks on the whole circuit.
Yeah, I mean, that gave me goosebumps just hearing about it. So you definitely should check out Darlington, and the racing's usually good. So especially the Xfinity race, because it's right in the middle of the day. I think that makes for a good race, obviously. But that wraps up this week's edition of the Front Stretch Podcast. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. And until next week, where we review Darlington and preview the Brickyard, two back-to-back marquee races on the series, we out.
Peace out.